6. He made cigarettes in the dark, then lit them and passed one to her. The room held her scent, fresh lilac, pathetic. The smell of the desert had overlaid it. He realized he was afraid of the desert ahead. "His name is Nort," she said. No harshness had been worn out of her voice. "Just Nort. He died." The gunslinger waited. "He was touched by God." The gunslinger said, "I have never seen him." "He was here ever since I can remember. Nort, I mean, not God." She laughed jaggedly into the dark. "He had a honey wagon for a while. Started to drink, started to smell the grass, then to smoke it. The kids started to follow him around and sick their dogs onto him. He wore old green pants that stank. Do you understand?" "Yes." "He started to chew it. At the last, he just sat in there and didn't eat anything. He might have been a king in his mind. The children might have been his jesters and the dogs his princes." "Yes." "He died right in front of this place," she said. "Came clumping down the boardwalk. His boots wouldn't wear out. They were engineer boots he found in the old train yard. With the children and dogs behind him, he looked like wire clothes hangers all wrapped and twirled together. You could see all the lights of hell in his eyes. But he was grinning, just like the grins the children carve into their sharp roots and pumpkins come reap. You could smell the dirt and the rot and the weed. It was running down from the corners of his mouth like green blood. I think he meant to come in and listen to Sheb play the piano. And right in front he stopped and cocked his head. I could see him, and I thought he heard a coach, although there was none due. Then he puked, and it was black and full of blood. It went right through that grin like sewer water through a grate. The stink was enough to make you want to run mad. He raised up his arms and just threw over. That was all. He died in his own vomit, with that grin on his face."
"A nice story."
"Oh, yes, thank ye, Si. This be a nice place." She was trembling beside him. Outside, the wind kept up its steady whine, and somewhere far away a door was banging, like a sound heard in a dream. Mice ran in the walls. The gunslinger thought in the back of his mind that it was probably the only place in town prosperous enough to support mice. He put a hand on her belly, and she started violently, then relaxed. "The man in black," he said. "You have to have it, don't you? You couldn't just throw me a fuck and go to sleep." "I have to have it." "All right, I tell you." She grasped his hand in both of hers and told him. 7. He came in the late afternoon of the day Nort died, and the wind was whooping it up, pulling away the loose topsoil, sending sheets of grit and uprooted stalks of corn windmilling past. Jubal Kennerly had padlocked the livery, and the few other merchants had shuttered their windows and laid boards across the shutters. The sky was the yellow color of old cheese, and the clouds flew across it as if they had seen something horrifying in the desert wastes where they had so lately been. The gunslinger's quarry came in a rickety rig with a rippling tarp tied across its bed. There was a big howdy-do of a grin on his face. They watched him come, and old man Kennerly, lying by the window with a bottle in one hand and the loose, hot flesh of his second eldest daughter's left breast in the other, resolved not to be there if he should knock. But the man in black went by without slowing the bay that pulled his rig, and the spinning wheels spumed up dust that the wind clutched eagerly. He might have been a priest or a monk. He wore a black robe that had been floured with dust, and a loose hood covered his head and obscured his features, but not that horrid, happy grin. The robe rippled and flapped. From beneath the garment's hem there peeped heavy, buckled boots with square toes. He pulled up in front of Sheb's and tethered the horse, which lowered its head and grunted at the ground. Around the back of the rig he untied one flap, found a weathered saddlebag, threw it over his shoulder, and went in through the bat wings. Alice watched him curiously, but no one else noticed his arrival. The regulars were drunk as lords. Sheb was playing Methodist hymns ragtime, and the grizzled layabouts who had come in early to avoid the storm and to attend Nort's wake had sung themselves hoarse. Sheb, drunk nearly to the point of senselessness, intoxicated and horny with his own continued existence, played with hectic shuttlecock speed, fingers flying like looms. Voices screeched and hollered, never overcoming the wind, but sometimes seeming to challenge it. In the corner, Zachary had thrown Amy Felden's skirts over her head and was painting reap charms on her knees. A few other women circulated. A fever seemed to be on all of them. The dull storm glow that filtered through the batwings seemed to mock them, however. Nort had been laid out on two tables in the center of the room. His engineer boots made a mystical V. His mouth hung open in a slack grin, although someone had closed his eyes and put slugs on them. His hands had been folded on his chest with a sprig of devil grass in them. He smelled like poison. The man in black pushed back his hood and came to the bar. Alice watched him, feeling trepidation mixed with the familiar want that hid within her. There was no religious symbol on him, although that meant nothing by itself. "Whiskey," he said. His voice was soft and pleasant. "I want the good stuff, honey." She reached under the counter and brought out a bottle of Star. She could have palmed off the local pop skull on him as her best, but did not. She poured, and the man in black watched her. His eyes were large, luminous. The shadows were too thick to determine their color exactly. Her need intensified. The hollering and whooping went on behind, unabated. Sheb, the worthless gelding, was playing about the Christian soldiers, and somebody had persuaded Aunt Mill to sing. Her voice, warped and distorted, cut through the babble like a dull axe through a calf's brain. "Hey, Allie!" She went to serve, resentful of the stranger's silence, resentful of his no-color eyes and her own restless groin. She was afraid of her needs. They were capricious and beyond her control. They might be the signal of change, which would in turn signal the beginning of her old age, a condition which in Tull was usually as short and bitter as a winter sunset. She drew beer until the keg was empty, then broached another. She knew better than to ask Sheb. He would come willingly enough, like the dog he was, and would either chop off his own fingers or spume beer all over everything. The stranger's eyes were on her as she went about it. She could feel them. "It's busy," he said when she returned. He had not touched his drink, merely rolled it between his palms to warm it. "Wake," she said. "I noticed the departed." "They're bums," she said with sudden hatred. "All bums." "It excites them. He's dead, they're not." "He was their butt when he was alive. It's not right that he should be their butt now. It's..." She trailed off, not able to express what it was or how it was obscene. "Weed eater?" "Yes. What else did he have?" Her tone was accusing, but he did not drop his eyes, and she felt the blood rush to her face. "I'm sorry, are you a priest? This must revolt you." "I'm not, and it doesn't." He knocked the whiskey back neatly and did not grimace. "Once more, please. Once more with feeling, as they say in the world next door." She had no idea what that might mean, and was afraid to ask. "I'll have to see the color of your coin first. I'm sorry." "No need to be." He put a rough silver coin on the counter, thick on one edge, thin on the other. And she said, as she would say later, "I don't have change for this." He shook his head, dismissing it, and watched absently as she poured again. "Are you only passing through?" she asked. He did not reply for a long time, and she was about to repeat when he shook his head impatiently. "Don't talk trivialities. You're here with death." She recoiled, hurt and amazed, her first thought being that he had lied about His Holiness to test her. "You cared for him," he said flatly. "Isn't that true?"
"Who, Nort?"
she laughed, affecting annoyance to cover her confusion.
"I think you better—"
"You're soft-hearted and a little afraid," he went on, and he was on the weed, looking out Hell's back door. "And there he is. They've even slammed the door now, and you don't think they'll open it until it's time for you to walk through, isn't it so?"
"What, are you drunk?"
"Mr. Norton, he dayed," the man in black intoned, giving the words a sardonic little twist. "Dead as anybody. Dead as you or anybody."
"Get out of my place."
She felt a trembling loathing spring up in her, but the warmth still radiated from her belly. "It's all right," he said softly. "It's all right.
Wait. Just wait."
The eyes were blue. She felt suddenly easy in her mind, as if she had taken a drug.
"Dead as anybody," he said. "Do you see?"
She nodded dumbly, and he laughed aloud, a fine, strong, untainted laugh that swung heads around. He whirled and faced them, suddenly the center of attention. Aunt Mill faltered and subsided, leaving a cracked high note bleeding on the air. Sheb struck a discord and halted. They looked at the stranger uneasily. Sand rattled against the sides of the building. The silence held, spun itself out. Her breath had clogged in her throat, and she looked down and saw both hands pressed to her belly beneath the bar. They all looked at him, and he looked at them. Then the laugh burst forth again, strong, rich, beyond denial. But there was no urge to laugh along with him.
"I'll show you a wonder,"
he cried at them. But they only watched him like obedient children taken to see a magician in whom they have grown too old to believe. The man in black sprang forward, and Aunt Mill drew away from him. He grinned fiercely and slapped her broad belly. A short, unwitting cackle was forced out of her, and the man in black threw back his head.
"It's better, isn't it?"
Aunt Mill cackled again, suddenly broke into sobs, and fled blindly through the doors. The others watched her go silently. The storm was beginning. Shadows followed each other, rising and falling on the white cyclorama of the sky. A man near the piano with a forgotten beer in one hand made a groaning, slobbering sound. The man in black stood over Nort, grinning down at him. The wind howled and shrieked and thrummed. Something large struck the side of the building, hard enough to make it shake, and then bounced away. One of the men at the bar tore himself free and headed for some quieter locale, moving in great, grotesque strides. Thunder racketed the sky with a sound like some god coughing.
"All right,"
the man in black grinned.
"All right, let's get down to it."
He began to spit into Nort's face, aiming carefully. The spittle gleamed on the corpse's forehead, pearled down the shaven beak of his nose. Under the bar, her hands worked faster. Sheb laughed, loon-like, and hunched over. He began to cough up phlegm, huge and sticky gobs of it, and let fly. The man in black roared approval and pounded him on the back. Sheb grinned, one gold tooth twinkling. Some fled. Others gathered in a loose ring around Nort. His face and the dew-lapped rooster wrinkles of his neck and upper chest gleamed with liquid, liquid so precious in this dry country. And suddenly the rain of spit stopped, as if on signal. There was ragged, heavy breathing. The man in black suddenly lunged across the body, jackknifing over it in a smooth arc. It was pretty, like a flash of water. He caught himself on his hands, sprang to his feet in a twist, grinning, and went over again. One of the watchers forgot himself, began to applaud, and suddenly backed away, eyes cloudy with terror. He slobbered a hand across his mouth and made for the door. Nort twitched. The third time the man in black went across. A sound went through the watchers, a grunt, and then they were silent. The man in black threw his head back and howled. His chest moved in a quick, shallow rhythm as he sucked air. He began to go back and forth at a faster clip, pouring over Nort's body like water poured from one glass to another, and then back again. The only sound in the room was the tearing rasp of his respiration and the rising pulse of the storm. There came the moment when Nort drew a deep, dry breath. His hands rattled and pounded aimlessly on the table. Sheb screeched and exited. One of the women followed him, her eyes wide and her wimple billowing. The man in black went across once more, twice, thrice. The body on the table was vibrating now, trembling and rapping and twitching like a large, yet essentially lifeless doll with some monstrous clockwork hidden inside. The smell of rot and excrement and decay billowed up in choking waves. There came a moment when his eyes opened. Allie felt her numb and feelingless feet propelling her backward. She struck the mirror, making it shiver, and blind panic took over. She bolted like a steer. "So here's your wonder," the man in black called after her, panting. "I've given it to you. Now you can sleep easy. Even that isn't irreversible. Although it's so goddamn funny." And he began to laugh again. The sound faded as she raced up the stairs, not stopping until the door to the three rooms above the bar was bolted. She began to giggle then, rocking back and forth on her haunches by the door. The sound rose to a keening wail that mixed with the wind. She kept hearing the sound Nort had made when he came back to life, the sound of fists knocking blindly on the lid of a coffin. What thoughts, she wondered, could be left in his reanimated brain? What had he seen while dead? How much did he remember? Would he tell? Were the secrets of the grave waiting downstairs? The most terrible thing about such questions, she reckoned, was that part of you really wanted to ask. Below her, Nort wandered absently out into the storm to pull some weed. The man in black, now the only patron in the bar, perhaps watched him go, perhaps still grinning. When she forced herself to go back down that evening, carrying a lamp in one hand and a heavy stick of stove wood in the other, the man in black was gone, rig and all. But Nort was there, sitting at the table by the door as if he had never been away. The smell of the weed was on him, but not as heavily as she might have expected. He looked up at her and smiled tentatively.
"Hello, Allie."
"Hello, Nort." She put the stove wood down and began lighting the lamps, not turning her back to him.
"I've been touched by God," he said presently. "I ain't going to die no more. He said so. It was a promise."
"How nice for you, Nort."
The spill she was holding dropped through her trembling fingers, and she picked it up.
"I'd like to stop chewing the grass," he said. "I don't enjoy it no more. It don't seem right for a man touched by God to be chewing the weed."
"Then why don't you stop?"
Her exasperation had startled her into looking at him as a man again, rather than an infernal miracle. What she saw was a rather sad-looking specimen, only half-stoned, looking hang-dog and ashamed. She could not be frightened by him any more.
"I shake," he said, "and I want it. I can't stop. Allie, you was always good to me."
He began to weep.
"I can't even stop being myself. What am I? What am I?"
She walked to the table and hesitated there, uncertain.
"He could have made me not want it," he said through the tears. "He could have done that if he could have made me be alive. I ain't complaining. I don't want to complain."
He stared around hauntedly and whispered,
He might strike me dead if I did.
Maybe it's a joke. He seemed to have quite a sense of humor.
Nort took his poke from where it dangled inside his shirt and brought out a handful of grass. Unthinkingly, she knocked it away and then drew her hand back, horrified.
I can't help it, Allie. I can't.
And he made a crippled dive for the poke. She could have stopped him, but she made no effort. She went back to lighting the lamps, tired, although the evening had barely begun. But nobody came in that night except old man Kennelly, who had missed everything. He did not seem particularly surprised to see Nort. Perhaps someone had told him what had happened. He ordered beer, asked where Sheb was, and pawed her. Later, Nort came to her and held out a folded piece of paper in one shaky, no-right-to-be-alive hand.
"He left you this," he said. "I near forgot. If I'd forgot, he would have come back and killed me, sure."
Paper was valuable, a commodity much to be treasured, but she didn't like to handle this. It felt heavy, nasty. Written on it was a single word. Allie.
How do you know my name? She asked Nort.
And Nort only shook his head. She opened it and read this.
You want to know about death? I left him a word. That word is 19. If you say it to him, his mind will be opened. He will tell you what lies beyond. He will tell you what he saw. The word is 19. Knowing will drive you mad. But sooner or later, you will ask. You won't be able to help yourself. Have a nice day. Walter O'Dim. P.S. The word is 19. You will try to forget, but sooner or later, it will come out of your mouth like vomit. 19. And, oh dear God, she knew that she would. Already it trembled on her lips. 19, she would say. Nort, listen, 19. And the secrets of death and the land beyond would be open to her. Sooner or later you will ask. The next day things were almost normal, although none of the children followed Nort. The day after that, the catcalls resumed. Life had gotten back on its own sweet keel. The uprooted corn was gathered together by the children, and a week after Nort's resurrection, they burned it in the middle of the street. The fire was momentarily bright, and most of the barflies stepped or staggered out to watch. They looked primitive. Their faces seemed to float between the flames and the ice-chip brilliance of the sky. Allie watched them and felt a pang of fleeting despair for the sad times of this world. The loss. Things had stretched apart. There was no glue at the center anymore. Somewhere something was tottering, and when it fell, all would end. She had never seen the ocean. Never would. If I had guts, she murmured. If I had guts. Guts. Guts.
Nort raised his head at the sound of her voice and smiled emptily at her from hell. She had no guts, only a bar and a scar and a word. It struggled behind her closed lips. Suppose she were to call him over now and draw him close, despite his stink. Suppose she said the word into the waxy bugger lug he called an ear. His eyes would change. They would turn into his eyes, those of the man in the robe. And then Nort would tell what he'd seen in the land of death, what lay beyond the earth and the worms.
I'll never say that word to him.
But the man who had brought Nort back to life and left her a note
left her a word like a cocked pistol she would someday put to her temple, had known better. 19 would open the secret. 19 was the secret. She caught herself writing it in a puddle on the bar. 19. And skidded it to nothingness when she saw Nort watching her. The fire burned down rapidly, and her customers came back in. She began to dose herself with the Star whiskey, and by midnight she was blackly drunk. 8. She ceased her narrative, and when he made no immediate comment, she thought at first that the story had put him to sleep. She began to drowse herself when he asked, "That's all?"
"Yes, that's all. It's very late."
"Hmm." He was rolling another cigarette.
"Don't go getting your tobacco dandruff in my bed," she told him, more sharply than she had intended.
"No." Silence again. The tip of his cigarette winked off and on.
"You'll be leaving in the morning,"
she said dully. "I should. I think he's left a trap for me here. Just like he left one for you."
"Do you really think that number would—"
"If you like your sanity, you don't ever want to say that word to Nort," the gunslinger said. "Put it out of your head. If you can, teach yourself that the number after 18 is 20. That half of 38 is 17. The man who signed himself Walter O'Dim is a lot of things, but a liar isn't one of them.
But
when the urge comes and it's strong, come up here and hide under your quilts and say it over and over again. Scream it if you have to, until the urge passes."
"A time will come when it won't pass."
The gunslinger made no reply, for he knew this was true. The trap had a ghastly perfection. If someone told you you'd go to hell if you thought about seeing your mother naked... Once, when the gunslinger was very young, he had been told this very thing. You'd eventually do it. And why? Because you did not want to imagine your mother naked. Because you did not want to go to hell. Because if given a knife and a hand in which to hold it, the mind would eventually eat itself. Not because it wanted to. Because it did not want to. Sooner or later, Allie would call Nort over and say the word.
"Don't go,"
she said. "We'll see." He turned on his side away from her, but she was comforted. He would stay, at least for a little while. She drowsed. On the edge of sleep, she thought again about the way Nort had addressed him in that strange talk. It was the only time she had seen her strange new lover express emotion, even his lovemaking. Had been a silent thing, and only at the last had his breathing roughened and then stopped for a second or two. He was like something out of a fairy tale or a myth, a fabulous, dangerous creature. Could he grant wishes? She thought the answer was yes, and that she would have hers. He would stay a while. That was wish enough for a luckless, scarred bitch such as she. Tomorrow was time enough to think of another, or a third. She slept. 9. In the morning she cooked him grits, which he ate without comment. He shoveled them in without thinking about her, hardly seeing her. He knew he should go. Every minute he sat here, the man in black was further away, probably out of the hard pan and arroyos and into the desert by now. His path had been undeviatingly southeast. And the gunslinger knew why. "Do you have a map?" he asked, looking up.
"Of the town?" she laughed. "There isn't enough of it to need a map."
"No, of what's southeast of here?"
Her smile faded. "The desert. Just the desert. I thought you'd stay for a little."
"What's on the other side of the desert?"
"How would I know? Nobody crosses it. Nobody's tried since I was here."
She wiped her hands on her apron, got potholders, and dumped the tub of water she had been heating into the sink, where it splashed and steamed.
"The clouds all go that way. It's like something sucks them."
He got up.
"Where are you going?"
She heard the shrill fear in her voice and hated it. "To the stable. If anyone knows, the hostler will." He put his hands on her shoulders. The hands were hard, but they were also warm. "And to arrange for my mule. If I'm going to be here, he should be taken care of. For when I leave." "But not yet." She looked up at him. "But you watch that, Kennelly. If he doesn't know a thing, he'll make it up." "Thank you, Allie." When he left, she turned to the sink, feeling the hot, warm drift of her grateful tears. How long since anyone had thanked her? Someone who mattered. 10. Kennelly was a toothless and unpleasant old satyr who had buried two wives and was plagued with daughters. Two half-grown ones peeked at the gunslinger from the dusty shadows of the barn. A baby drooled happily in the dirt. A full-grown one, blonde, dirty, and sensual, watched with a speculative curiosity as she drew water from the groaning pump beside the building. She caught the gunslinger's eye, pinched her nipples between her fingers, dropped him a wink, and then went back to pumping. The hostler met him halfway between the door to his establishment and the street. His manner vacillated between a kind of hateful hostility and craven fawning.
"It's being cared for, never fear it," he said,
and before the gunslinger could reply, Kennelly turned on his daughter with his fists up, a desperate, scrawny rooster of a man.
"You get in, Subie. You get right the hell in."
Subie began to drag her bucket sullenly toward the shack appended to the barn. "You meant my mule," the gunslinger said.
"Yes, sire. Ain't seen no mule in quite a time, especially one that looks as threaded as yourn. Two eyes, four legs."
His face squinched together alarmingly in an expression meant to convey either extreme pain or the notion that a joke had been made. The gunslinger assumed it was the latter, although he had little or no sense of humor himself.
"Time was they used to grow up wild for want of 'em," Kennelly continued. "But the world has moved on. Ain't seen nothing but a few muty oxen and the coach horses and Subie, I'll whale you, 'fore God."
"I don't bite," the gunslinger said pleasantly. Kennelly cringed and grinned. The gunslinger saw the murder in his eyes quite clearly, and although he did not fear it, he marked it as a man might mark a page in a book, one that contained potentially valuable instructions.
"It ain't you, Gods, no, it ain't you," he grinned loosely. "She just naturally gawky. She got a devil, she wild."
His eyes darkened.
"It's coming to last times, mister. You know how it says in the book, children won't obey their parents, and a plague'll be visited on the multitudes. You only have to listen to the preacher woman to know it."
The gunslinger nodded, then pointed southeast. "What's out there?" Kennelly grinned again, showing gums and a few sociable yellow teeth.
"Dwellers! Weed, desert. What else?"
He cackled, and his eyes measured the gunslinger coldly. "How big is the desert?"
"Big."
Kennelly endeavored to look serious, as if answering a serious question.
"Maybe 1,000 wheels, maybe 2,000. I can't tell you, mister. There's nothing out there but devil grass and maybe demons. Heard there was a speaking ring somers on the far side. But that is probably a lie. That's the way the other fellow went. The one who fixed up Naughty when he was sick."
"Sick? I heard he was dead." Kennelly kept grinning.
"Well, well, maybe. But we're grown-up men, ain't we?"
"But you believe in demons." Kennelly looked affronted.
"That's a lot different. Preacher woman says..."
He blathered and palavered ever onward. The gunslinger took off his hat and wiped his forehead. The sun was hot, beating steadily. Kennelly seemed not to notice. Kennelly had a lot to say, none of it sensible. In the thin shadow by the livery, the baby girl was gravely smearing dirt on her face. The gunslinger finally grew impatient and cut the man off in mid-spate. "You don't know what's after the desert?" Kennelly shrugged.
"Some might. The coach ran through part of it 50 years ago. My pap said so. He used to say 'twas mountains. Others say an ocean, a green ocean with monsters. And some say that's where the world ends, that there ain't nothing but lights that'll drive a man blind in the face of God with his mouth open to eat him up.
Drivel, the gunslinger said shortly.
Sure it is,
Kennelly cried happily. He cringed again, hating, fearing, wanting to please. You see, my mule is looked after. He flicked Kennelly another coin, which Kennelly caught on the fly. The gunslinger thought of the way a dog will catch a ball.
Surely. You staying a little?
I guess I might. There'll be water.
If God wills it. Sure, sure.
Kennelly laughed unhappily, and his eyes went on wanting the gunslinger stretched out dead at his feet.
That alley's pretty nice when she wants to be, ain't she?
The hustler made a loose circle with his left fist and began poking his right finger rapidly in and out of it. "Did you say something?" the gunslinger asked remotely. Sudden terror dawned in Kennelly's eyes, like twin moons coming over the horizon. He put his hands behind his back like a naughty child caught with the jam jar.
"No, shy, not a word, and I'm right sorry if I did."
He caught sight of Subie leaning out a window and whirled on her.
"I'll whale you now, you little slut-whore! For God, I'll—"
The gunslinger walked away, aware that Kennelly had turned to watch him, aware of the fact that he could whirl and catch the hostler with some true and untinctured emotion distilled on his face. Why bother? It was hot, and he knew what the emotion would be. Just hate. Hate of the outsider. He'd gotten all the man had to offer. The only sure thing about the desert was its size. The only sure thing about the town was that it wasn't all played out here. Not yet.